David called it. David. And they say you don't have inside sources.
Hello and welcome again to the TCB Podcast, Episode 5. What you just heard was the reaction from the TCB Draft War Room. And in the War Room this evening was myself, Timmy, your host, a.k.a. Tim DeBlock. Also joining me tonight is David Coleman, a.k.a. The Cyborg.
How you doing, everybody?
And also Brooks Parker, a.k.a. Subber 10.
Hey!
And rejoining us is Sean Feist, a.k.a. Native Astro.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
And we have a special guest, Joshua Palling, a.k.a. Astro Brit.
Oh, it's 2 in the morning, and I need some sleep.
I was just about to ask you what time it was, so now that we got that out of the way, I think we can all move on to the draft, which I'm sure everyone is dying to talk about. But first, I would like to point out that I predicted the position that we would be drafting. So, you know, I'm going to take a little credit for that one. But let's move on to impressions. What do you guys think of the selection? George Springer out of UConn.
This system has really lacked a high-profile bat, and we finally have a legitimate high-profile bat that's going to bat right in the middle of the order. He's got power potential, and that's something that this system's really has lacked. So I'm on board. I like it.
Yeah, we really don't have like that five-tool potential player, and Springer could be that guy. He's like you said, he's got plus power. He could hit for a little average. He probably needs to cut down on his strikes, but for once, the Astros drafted the best player on the board, arguably. You got to like this pick.
Yeah, I definitely think he was in that big clump of players that I think we all would have been happy with. Obviously, I think besides David, we all would have groaned at a Wong selection.
How would you groan at that? He's just could be the best hitter in this draft. I mean, I'm sorry, you don't like talent.
Well, and the other way around, if, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. happened to get picked, you guys would all groan and I would have been cheering, you know, so.
Well, here's a little shocker update. Chris Reed, he just went 16th to the Dodgers.
Did he really?
Yeah.
No way. Oh,
sweet lead. Yep.
So I'm not the overdraft and the butt of the jokes this year.
Well, you know, the Dodgers only have like $5 to spend on this draft, so
it was. I don't even think they have that.
Yeah, did MLB make this pick, or did the Dodgers actually make this pick?
Who knows? But, you know, it's looking more and more likely that Logan White may want out of that situation, because it doesn't look like that sale's going to happen anytime soon, and he may be looking for a new job, which is good for the Astros, but bad for the Dodgers.
I think fans will like this pick. I think overall, last few years, the overall gut reaction at first has been, oh God, we picked him. 5 minutes later, fans have thought better of the initial reaction and thought, you know, okay, this is okay, but we could have picked some, you know, someone with more talent. But this year, I think people will have thought straight away, yep, we've got someone who can help the franchise in maybe 2 to 3 years. Just my impression.
Yeah, you know, I hate to always be the Astros history guy and making comparisons to Astros players that, you know, some people that read at the site don't have the necessary background on, because I just don't know. I am always shocked when people say they came in and became Astros fans in like 03 or 04. And, you know, I go back to the mid 90s and earlier. But anyway, so the Astros comp that I like about Springer is somebody like Richard Hidalgo or Bobby Abreu, both who came up as center fielders. You know, they were these five-tool guys, exciting. They were fast. They had power. They could play. And I think Springer could be that kind of prospect. I don't think ultimately he's going to have all five tools in the major leagues, but I think he's going to have enough of them to be a really, really good middle-of-the-order bat for Houston and be ready fairly quickly. And this isn't a guy that's going to need a bunch of time in the minors, which is, I think, also a plus not only for the Astros right now, but also for new owner Jim Crane. He's got a guy all of a sudden that he can point to in 2012, maybe by the end of the 2012 season, maybe by 2013, as the next face of the franchise.
Does George Springer take over the number one spot? We were actually debating that on the site a couple days ago.
Quite possibly. He's probably has some of the highest upside in the system now. There's a few guys that do have higher upside potentially, but he has the ability and the chance of reaching his upside, his ceiling, more than anybody else probably. So he, debatably, he could be. He's definitely a top three for sure in my book.
Yeah, I would go top five at this point because we don't know whether Lyles is still going to have prospect status next year. You know, just because he gets three starts right now doesn't mean that he's going to be a non-rookie by next year. Also, Jonathan Villar is certainly started out his double-A career very strongly, and he's got a lot of talent as well, and he's kind of putting it all together this year. So I think he probably stays ahead of Springer in the, you know, when you're looking at the organization. And then, you know, Ariel Ovando, I think, is going to be right there with Springer as toolsy outfielders that, you know, their swings, they have a lot of business in them at the beginning, or Ovando has more than Springer, but they're kind of similar in that respect, and they both have, you know, all the tools that you could want out of a future outfielder. So I think, you know, he's maybe around that 3 to 5 range of prospects when it ultimately shakes out.
Has he leapfrogged JD Martinez?
Probably so, yeah, which is unfortunate because my boy JD is does not get as enough love as I think he deserves.
Yeah, certainly.
And a lot of that kind of depends on how you formulate your own top picks or your top sure. prospects. If you go more on statistical data and what they've done so far, no. But if you're going off of scouting reports and tools, he definitely leapfrogs JD Martinez because mm-hmm. he plays a much more premium position and he's got, you know, more power potential, may not hit for quite the same, not high enough average to be comparable in that book to JD. But I mean, it just kind of depends on what you really value the most when putting together those kind of lists.
Well, and if you look at it from the aspect of who's going to be in the most All-Star games in the future, I think Springer has a better chance of being that because his tools are flashy. You know, he's going to hit the home runs and chicks dig the long ball. And he's got speed. So, you know, he could be a 20-20 guy. He could be 30-30 in the absolute best scenario for the Astros, you know, and him reaching his ceiling. And that's, it's not only rare, it's exciting and gets a player noticed nationally, which right now the Astros are also struggling with, you know, having an identity as a team in the national eye.
And plus, I mean, it really does help that he plays that premium position. A 30-30 guy at center field is much more impressive than a guy who hits 30 home runs in left field, which JD Martinez, I mean, we're looking at 20 home runs, although he's going to hit for, you know, a 300 average in left field. That 30 home runs in center field is so much more spectacular, so much more eye-popping. That's really what's going to get him into an All-Star game more over JD Martinez.
Yeah, but can he cover Minute Maid Park center field?
Yeah, he won't be as good as Bourne, but he's got enough speed that he can do a pretty good job playing center field in Minute Maid Park. I think he's probably he's definitely better than Berkman when Berkman was in center field, but he's probably not as good as Bourne. So, you know, you kind of got the scale right there.
Who wasn't better than Berkman in center field?
Do you remember that catch Berkman made when he, like,
yes, falling down the hill?
Mm-hmm. On the hill? Yeah. That was an all-time catch right there. So don't talk bad about Berkman in center field.
Okay, that was one play.
It was still an awesome play. It's worth something.
How many of those has Bourne had, though, in comparison?
Won a game.
Field, right? Huh?
I rest my case. You throw anybody out there, and eventually they're going to fall on the hill and make a nice grab.
Yeah, we're going to miss his defense in Minute Maid Park's spacious center field when he's gone. We're just taking it for granted, I think, at the moment.
You talking about Michael Bourne?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I definitely agree. I don't like the fact that people want to trade him. You know, and there's a history of Astros trading their center fielders. What's up with that? It's like when we finally get a good center fielder, hey, let's trade him.
You're not calling Willie Taveras a good center fielder, are you?
Well, you know, defensively, he UZR. I think he was pretty good. I think the first couple years. How many years was there? I don't remember. I know, like, the first year or two, he didn't have the greatest year in center field, but he did have a pretty good year. He had an above-average year. So he certainly could cover center field in Minute Maid Park. It's his hitting that was atrocious.
Yeah. Well, and going back to the Kenny Lofton deal that kind of started the Astros' never-ending search for a center fielder, and then they traded away Steve Finley and just had a really bad run there in the from the mid-90s till now, really, with Bourne.
Yeah, and you had...
Didn't Bidge play center at one point?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yep, I was going to say we threw Biggio out there, we threw Berkman out there.
Pence played center field?
Yeah, he did. He did. I think he did an admirable job, but he certainly plays
Chris
better
Burke.
In the field. Chris
Richard
Burke.
Hidalgo.
Chris Burke started 2007 as our opening day starting center fielder.
Yeah, he did.
That lasted a month, didn't it?
So, but what you're saying is if the Washington Nationals came to the Astros this summer and offered them three prospects for Michael Bourne, you would not make that deal?
I want quantity, not quality here.
If they offered AJ Cole, I would jump on that in a second.
I don't think teams would shell out for Bourne. I just don't see them offering a package that we could use in the future. I just don't see a team doing that.
No, I don't either. But I was kind of intrigued with the reports that the Washington is looking for a center fielder, and Bourne is obviously playing for a really bad team, and Washington has some prospects. So there's kind of a fit there. Like I've said the whole time with Bourne, I don't think the Astros get enough value back for him in a trade to what he brings to the team. And, you know, I think that's kind of, Tim, the reason that you're against trading him as well. I think he's more valuable when he walks as a free agent than any trade that we could get for him.
Well, and you got to think he's going to play center field if the Astros stay with him. I don't really buy into this whole Scott Boras. He's got Scott Boras now, so the Astros will he'll go away in free agency. I don't buy into that. I think especially with the new owner, there could be the possibility that it stays in Houston. It's his hometown. He's obviously he provides more value in Minute Maid Park than he would in any other center field. So, you know, there's a Fangraphs article that I linked in one of my link posts that discussed how Bourne could be signed for less than he's actually worth. And, you know, he said the Astros should trade him. But, I mean, shouldn't any team, whether it's a bad team or a good team, shouldn't they be looking for those deals to sign players for contracts that don't exceed their value?
Yeah, that's. I completely agree that Bourne, like I said, he's valuable to the Astros. He's signed at a reasonable dollar amount. He provides much more in base running and defense than shows up in his batting line. And really, I mean, you look at it, the batting average, the home runs, the steals, those are all the flashy things that get him paid. He's got a lot of steals, and so that's going to make his price tag a little better. He's also got the gold gloves, which is going to raise his price tag up. But overall, I think Bourne is not going to get paid like he's worth simply because his skill set is kind of undervalued on the open market.
Well, this is what you want. You want prospects coming up, then you have surplus to deal. This is what Hunsicker was so good at. He was good at dealing surplus, and we haven't had that at all in the last 4 or 5 years because we've had such a dearth. So this is a good quandary to have.
I think Joshua nailed it. I think this might be an opportunity, like whether it's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, they might just look at this opportunity as, you know what, let's turn one piece into four pieces or three pieces. Just because where we're at, you know, talent-wise, when we have so many holes, that the only way that we rebound this, you know, sunken ship is to get deeper.
And what are the Nationals doing looking for a center fielder? They're 26 and 33. They're not doing anything this year. If any team should not be looking to trade, it's the Washington Nationals.
Hey, judge Tim. I just go with what I read. If they want to make the trade, I'm perfectly willing to take their prospects. I'm just throwing it out there.
Does Washington Nationals have a good farm system? Minus Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg.
Strasburg.
Yeah, exactly. Is there anyone past those two? And now Anthony Rendon. Is there anyone past those guys?
Yeah, they got AJ Cole.
What's
I think he's like the I think he's the fourth rated prospect in their organization.
What's is he a pitcher, position player?
Yeah, no, he's a right-handed pitcher. He's a starter.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean they're not the Kansas City Royals in terms of how deep their farm system is, but they are definitely stronger than the Astros. And, you know, when you pick at the top of the first round for the last 5 years or whatever that Washington has, you're bound to generate some talent unless you're completely inept. And, you know, they've even got the Rick Hague, I think they drafted last year from Rice, who's a shortstop, and I haven't looked at him in a little while. But, you know, the adding, you know, pieces up the middle like that that could fit for the Astros, it, you know, I don't think that they could generate a package that I would personally get excited about to trade Bourne, but no one is going to do that unless you offer, you know, the crazy Manny Banuelos or Michael Pineda or, you know, the guys that never actually get into a deal like that. Those are the kind of guys that I would have to ask for Bourne, because I don't think that he should get traded for anything. You know, for his value does not match up with what he would get on the market, basically.
Okay, so I can hear our listeners screaming at us, get back to George Springer. We've gotten so far off topic here. We're talking about Michael Bourne, which a lot of people would rather see traded. How long until you guys see George Springer making an impact on the major league level?
I'm going to have to probably say closer to maybe the end of 2013 at the earliest. You have him in short season ball probably this year, and he will probably start off in Lancaster next year. And then you have him, you know, Lancaster, if he does well, you know, go on to Corpus for the second half or whatever that season. And then at some point in 2013, he'll probably make his debut. That's a best-case scenario, though.
Well, and you also have to look at the depth in the system ahead of him right now. You've got Jay Austin, who's probably going to be at least at AA by the time he gets into the system.
Don't forget TJ Steele.
We hope. Oh my lord.
Do not bring up that name.
How could I forget the next Cesar Cedeno? Yes. Austin Waits, you know, there's still some talk that he may be able to play center field. So, you know, I think he's ahead of Springer on the depth chart. And DDJ, you know, where does he stick? If they're serious about Altuve at second base, do they transition him back to the outfield with his struggles at second? You know, and does he then, is he ahead of Springer in the depth chart? I don't know. But I could see at least two, maybe three guys ahead of him in the pecking order at center field. And, I think he'd have to come in and really just, you know, hit 400 with 15 home runs or something like that in short season ball to jump over somebody like Jay Austin and DDJ or whoever else is the other center fielder that, you know, he would be jumping.
Okay.
I'm not sure though about that, because I mean, you're investing who knows how much money, approximately, you know, close to $2 million in a first round guy versus Jay Austin, who is a second or third round guy. So, I mean, you have more. Yeah. So you have more invested in this first round guy. So if he is hitting phenomenally, you with tons of power, and he's playing good enough center field, I can kind of see him taking, you know, jumping Jay Austin, because we've already seen it this year with Austin Waits and Jay Austin. Right now, they're flip-flopping between center field, left field, right field. They're playing all over the place, and it's because they're trying to get Austin Waits playing time in center field. So, I mean, that's – I don't know if they're necessarily are willing to still keep Jay Austin ahead of him in the pecking order.
Well, you could also see a situation like we had with Albert Cartwright, where they just simply trade from their strength, just to open up a free spot.
Yeah, that's
definitely a good point, because you can look at they received Escalante, right? Who's pitching at the major league level right now. Yeah. So, I mean, he's obviously provided value. And last I checked, Albert Cartwright wasn't really doing all that well on the Phillies farm.
I think he had an injury or something early this year.
Yeah. I don't think he's even played this year yet.
Yeah, and that's true. I think it would have to be a deal like that to to get Springer to really jump Jay Austin, because I think Jay Austin's going to be at Corpus, maybe not by the end of the year, but certainly to start next year. And if you jump him with George Springer and start Springer at AA next year and have him do the flip floppy thing with Austin Waits there, well, that basically says you're giving up on Jay Austin. 3 years at high A ball is not what you want to do to a player who's young and developing. You know, you're going to lower his value just by the perception of him, you know, being in the same league 3 straight years. So from a developmental angle like that, I think they've got to do something to move Jay Austin up. And I don't think Springer jumps him right away, but certainly in 2 years, you know, if Jay Austin goes to AA and doesn't hit next year and Springer tears up Lancaster, I could see them flip flopping and just saying, well, you know, we don't have as much value in Austin as we thought.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that you start Springer in Lancaster next year.
Yeah.
And then mid-season, you evaluate Jay Austin in Corpus Christi next year. Then, I mean, because at that point, Austin Waits may not even be stealing playing time from him in center field, because Austin Waits is hitting like he has a chance to possibly be moving up to Corpus this year. And then next year, he has a potential to start off in AAA. And so all you have to worry about is him, you know, taking playing time away from Jay Austin and not Austin Waits. Best case scenario.
I'm going to sell this right now. Jay Austin is done. He's hitting 74.
He's done.
He is done. He's hitting 74-2 in Lancaster. Not to mention, he's been caught 9 times. 9 times out of 23 attempts.
He's learning. How old is he?
He's 20 this year. I mean, how long does it take? He's repeating a level.
But that's the thing, is we knew coming in that Jay Austin was a raw, toolsy guy. He's going to take a little while to develop. I mean, that's part of drafting a high school guy, and that's not in the first round. You're going to have to wait on him.
Wait, hold on. When was TJ Steele drafted? Was it the same year?
2008, yeah.
Yeah, he's TJ Steele light, I'm sorry to say. Okay, maybe
you can't
not.
Compare him. TJ Steele's like 3 years older.
Jay Austin, okay. TJ Steele.
Okay, he is going to be what TJ Steele is.
We're about to kick you off of this podcast. I don't care if you do run this thing.
You guys don't like the TJ Steele to Jay Austin comparison?
Not at all.
I mean, we're talking about Jay Austin is doing this right now at high A ball. And this would still have been, TJ Steele's junior year at Arizona. So, you know, he wasn't even in the system when he was the same age. And Austin's having some success at Lancaster. Yeah, it's not great.
At Lancaster. At Lancaster. It's an oxymoron.
But it's not like they're letting him do the things that make you successful at Lancaster. They're not letting him pull the ball into that wind and hit it up in the air and get a bunch of home runs. They're making him hit the ball on the ground and try to use his speed because that's what they think he's going to need to do to succeed at the next level.
Well,
and
he's not getting the job done. He's got a .343 on-base percentage. It's not working. You want to complain about how bad Michael Bourne is getting on base? Jay Austin would be sub .300 at the major league level.
Jay Austin is 20 years old. You can't compare him to Michael Bourne right now.
I mean, he's got 4 years of development time, you know, realistically.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's got 4 years. I just don't think he's figuring it out. And, you know, I'm on record as saying I'm not into the toolsy guys, and he's just another toolsy player that I have no love for.
All right, what do you think about Jonathan Villar, VR?
He's another toolsy player. Show me something. I mean, he's up to Corpus Christi. We'll kind of see how he goes there. But I'm more into the results. I am more into the results than I am to talent and tools and whatever you guys talk about.
But VR's
but
not
everything changing. Starts with tools.
Yeah. Well, some of them got to use them. Some people just don't know how to use their tools.
That's why you have the prospect age till 25 to give them, you know, that chance to figure it out.
Yeah, if it takes Jay Austin 5 more years to get to the major league level, I'm sorry, he's at best a utility infielder.
Whoa, when is he transitioning to the infield?
Wait,
We're not exactly hitting Tim's strong suit talking about the minor leagues. So
I stick by that. He'll be utility infielder. Cause he's
the next Jeff Kepinger, huh?
Well, no, not even that. He's gonna have, if he wants to make it to the major league level in the first place, he's going to have to start learning infield position. So there you go.
All right. I'm going on record right now. Tanner Bushu is going to be our backup catcher.
Now that's just ridiculous. He's gonna play first base.
Speaking of getting George Springer into short season, do you think he signs quickly, or is he going to sign? You know, is it going to take him till the end of, you know, until Jim Crane takes over to sign?
He's not going to take as long as Austin Waits took last year to sign. But you definitely have to wait for him to finish up with his playoffs. UConn's doing really well right now, so yeah, you have a little time until he's done before we can actually sign him. And it's really kind of dependent on what you think he's going to take to sign. If he's going to go for a slot deal, I think he will sign fairly soon. What ownership changeover really won't have much effect for it, I don't think. If it is going to be a slot deal, then I think it's going to have to wait until Jim Crane takes over.
I think it's probably a comparable situation to Jason Castro when he signed in 2008. Where he was in the middle of a playoff, and we had to wait until the playoffs ended. And he probably does sign close to slot or just a little bit above.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a question that he's going to sign. It makes too much sense for a player to be drafted as high as he did this year when there's not a hard slotting system so that he can kind of negotiate his way to a higher signing bonus. To not sign this year. I don't think he goes in the top 10 next year if he goes back to college. So, you know, he's in a situation where the Astros probably know he wants to sign. He knows he wants to sign, but he's going to play a little hard to get and work that system until he's finished with this super regional College World Series run with UConn to, you know, get a little more money out of him, to figure out when he's going to sign. I agree that I don't see it going down to the August 15th deadline, but I'd be surprised if it lasts very long, because, you know, like we've talked about before, the Astros have a budget. You know, they've worked out how much money they're going to spend on the draft before the Crane stuff even came down the pike. So, you know, I don't think that's affected. I think they know how much he's going to get, and they know how that fits into the rest of their signing bonuses. And we'll just kind of go from there.
I'm adding something. I don't know whether you've all seen, but he's had to leave the UConn game. Pulled up lame, apparently.
He did what?
He's just he's had to leave the game with an injury. Springer was playing.
That's great.
Yeah.
The luck of the Astros.
Yeah, seriously. Well, and I was pulling up that game because Mike Towser, Farmstros, was tweeting that he's already got one RBI in the Clemson game, and being a South Carolina Gamecock, seeing a recent, you know, our most recent draft pick beat up on Clemson is something that makes me giddy. So I was looking for him in the lineup, but he's not in the lineup. And I was like, what the heck? And then you brought that up. So I think that kind of explains it. What kind of injury is it?
It doesn't say. It just says he pulled up when he's running the bases or something.
Oh, okay.
To that.
So it could just be some, it could just be a cramp
or
something.
Could just be a tweak or something. Yeah,
yeah, let's not freak out here.
Could be his ACL though. He could be done. He could be done.
Don't say that. Well, I guess he'll be signing. Well, maybe he won't be signing anytime soon.
We'll have to work out a deal like Barrett Laux, make him a free agent immediately.
You know what? I mean, with the sound of next year's draft, you might want to go ahead and sign him and just work through. Like I said,
just see what happens. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and most organizations are able to deal with, you know, injuries nowadays. That the medicine has become so advanced that you can deal with some of these injuries that these draftees have, and so the injury factor isn't as much of a big deal as it used to be.
And that's why I'm getting a doctor of physical therapy.
Yep, you can be our expert.
Exactly.
In fact, one of these future podcasts, you and me are going to have it out about the one drug that who is it? Danny Mazzaro got banned for last year.
Methyl hexanamine or yes, AKA yes. 1,3-dimethylamine. It's crap. It's garbage. I take it every single day. There's no reason why he should have gotten a 50-game suspension.
You know this podcast follows the MLB policy for drug testing, right?
Test yes, me. I haven't taken it in
2 days.
We're
all clean here.
Yeah, okay. All right. So does this does drafting an outfielder open the door for a trade, especially with the, you know, George Springer can move up fairly quickly. So does that open the door for a trade of Hunter Pence or Michael Bourne?
No, it just opens the door for Carlos Lee to be designated for assignment.
I think everyone's assuming that JD Martinez is going to take over left field with his tendonitis. That the Minute Maid Park's left field would certainly be perfect, the perfect spot for him.
Hey, I'm going to throw out a wild scenario for you and say that Austin Waits could jump to Corpus Christi in a couple weeks.
Hold on, I'm going to drop my mic for a minute while I laugh.
You're going to laugh? Yeah. So Austin Waite moves up to Corpus, finishes out the year strong, hits about 340, and then he takes over left field next year after Carlos is DFA'd in the offseason.
Oh, you said Austin Waite.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's JD.
I thought you were talking Jay Austin. I get those two confused all the time just because they have Austin in their name somewhere.
Right, right. No, you know, as much as I like JD Martinez, I think that, you know, you got to clear out some of that room in center field. And so moving Austin Waits up that quickly would certainly clear out some space for George Springer to take over.
Can he? Can Austin Waits cover Minute Maid Park center field?
Well, he would be playing left field in my scenario.
Oh, well, I understand that, but I'm asking if they trade Bourne if Austin Waits could cover center field.
I think Austin Waits has probably got the range to cover center field. I don't think anybody's going to cover it like Michael Bourne, but right. I think out of everybody in our system,
I
he
could.
Did you see your head?
With a golf cart, maybe.
one of those Segway machines.
Yeah.
You see Brooks rolling around.
I'm not coordinated to use those things, so no.
Yeah, you probably fall off it. The hill would definitely pose a challenge to you.
I can handle it as good as Les Berkman did. Oh, all right. Sorry. Go.
Well, you know, and it's a little bit like, you know, asking, oh, well, can you play shortstop as good as Ozzie Smith can for the Cardinals? You know.
No, but it's, I think Minute Maid Park's center field is very different from any other ballpark, which is why I kind of throw in that stipulation when we're talking about center field, because that's where he is going to be playing half his games. So, I mean, the shortstop is it's always going to be the same, but the center fields are going to be different, and certainly in Minute Park, it's a big deal.
Sorry, I got to cut in here for a second, but your boy Colton Wong,
mm-hmm.
You're never going to guess where he went to.
Oh. Good Lord.
St. Louis.
They weren't happy with just taking fame. Lance Berkman. You had to take Colton Wong too.
Well, they also got Zach Cox last year.
I know.
So they're just stacking up on, you know, the middle or the corner infielders.
Well, I hear Zach Cox hasn't really been doing well. Or could I be off on that?
He just jumped to Double A, I believe. Yeah.
Did he really? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He's in Double A. So, I mean, he's playing at a level that's really above him right now. I mean, he's hitting for a decent average. It's just he's not hitting for a lot of power. But that was really the question mark with him. I think eventually it'll come. I'm still a Zach Cox fan, though. I don't care what y'all say.
Zach Cox, he's very similar to Colton Wong, where he just rakes. He doesn't hit for power, but he just hits.
But, I mean, that's the same thing with Kwasnicka. That's what we have right there. Third baseman who hits for a high average, but has question marks around his power. And we took him with the first supplemental pick. Yeah.
It was Tal Smith's fault, I think.
We blame everything bad on Tal Smith.
That's right. We need a college guy. Give me Kwasnicka. I like his name.
George Springer just got injured. Blame it on Tal Smith. It's all his fault. So if anything, what don't we like about the George Springer selection?
We were lacking a ace type pitcher in the system, and there was potential to grab one, and we didn't get that. But I'm okay with it because we lacked power and Springer's got power.
Well, out of all the guys that were still left on the board, who would you really classify as an ace? Would it be Barnes? I mean, Youngman was there, but there's still questions on how he really transitions. Is this stuff really going to transition to the next level? Because he really stays around the strike zone a lot, and it's just, I don't know if he has the stuff, the pure actual stuff for the way he just is constantly over the middle of the plate.
A lot of teams have passed on those college pitchers, and we thought they were, well, I'd say we, a lot of people did think that those, you know, Jed Bradley was going to go in the top 10, and so many teams passed on those in the early selections, you almost think there's a consensus that it's better to pick hitters in that situation, that they're not going to be aces down the road, and that they are more mid-rotation starters, maybe.
Well, what's that saying? There's no pitching prospect?
Yeah, there's no such thing as a real pitching prospect or something like that.
Yeah, I think certainly, especially in a deep draft, you know, you got to take a look at the position players.
But I think there's still potential, even like with the second round. I mean, you can get a similar type upside guy. I mean, he's going to have a much lower floor. Somebody like Brian Brickhouse, he's got that type of upside where he can be a mid-rotation starter, but his floor is just a whole lot lower. So, I mean, I agree. You've got to look at a position player because of the amount of pitching, the pitching is going to kind of get overvalued because everybody wants to grab one of them. And so a guy like Springer, if there was less pitching in this draft, he would have gone a little bit higher probably. So you get a little bit better value.
Well, there's also the guys that, you know, the guys that have slid out of the first round, like the Matt Perks or the John Stilsons, that the Astros could just take a gamble on a high upside guy and hope that he rebounds.
Stilson's a little bit too high of an injury risk for me, personally. But I like the Matt Perk, depending on how much it's going to require to sign him. I mean, if we're talking about $2 million, to be honest, I don't know if he'll sign for $2 million. I think he'll probably say, no, I'll go back to school, rebuild my stock, have a good season next year, and get drafted a whole lot earlier, especially with the draft class next year being a little weak.
Yeah, he could definitely go back in next year, or he could just sign, and you know what? Why take the risk? Maybe next year that my value just keeps on going down, and even in next year's draft, he falls out of the first round. He's an interesting one. So I agree, if they were going to gamble on somebody, he would be a definitely a high, you know, high or low risk, high reward type guy.
If they weren't going to gamble on Barrett-Lew, though, last season, if they weren't going to gamble on Barrett-Lew, are they really going to gamble a second round pick on Matt Perk, though?
Yeah, the college arms they have taken in the past haven't really been guys that had injury risks or, you know, looked like. I guess Chris Hicks was taken, was that 3 years ago? And he was kind of coming off some injuries and had some concerns. But yeah, from most of the college guys they take at the, you know, in the first 20 rounds or so, they're pretty clean. You know, they haven't gotten overused or anything like that. They don't have these nagging injuries like Perks had. Mm-hmm. It just seems like their philosophy is to stay away from guys like that.
Yeah. Well, didn't Tanner Boucher have back concerns coming out of high school?
He did. He had a small fracture in one of his spines or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, he only had 5 starts in the GCL in his first year. And then, so he did have an injury history. But as far as early round picks, he's really the only one that's had any injury history.
Well, he's also a college player. You know, the Jordan Lyles also, didn't he have an injury that, you know, limited his velocity until he had the workout with the Astros, and that's what sold him on him or whatever. Yeah, I think they're willing to go take a little riskier guys that are coming out of high school. But for the college picks, I don't think they necessarily go after guys that, you know, have those little nagging injuries or, you know, have concerns in that area. They want guys that they take out of college to be pretty solid, that they can slot into a rotation in the minor leagues, that can move up, that can eat innings, that can kind of teach the guys around them, and they can rely on to perform admirably, if not well. Like Bobby Doran this year at Lancaster is certainly getting lit up, but he's, you know, eating innings, he's giving them, you know, running out there every 5 days, and, you know, he's not hurt, basically, is the only good thing you can say about him.
And unfortunately, that you can kind of say that for just about any of the recent college pitchers that we've taken. And I'm talking about the earliest ones that we've taken in each draft. None of them have really panned out except for, I mean, you can say Dallas Keuchel and Jake Buchanan, but guys like, I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Duncan. That guy has not had any success. Then Doran hasn't had success. A lot of the early college pitchers that we've taken have not really done anything in our minor league system except for Keuchel and Buchanan.
Well, they tend to the target college pitchers usually in the later rounds, or I'd say like round six on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think they're usually more inclined to go with the high ceiling high school guy, you know, with mm-hmm. Vincent Velasquez,
yeah,
right, guys like that over, you know, the quick fix college guy.
Yeah, and I'm all right with that. I like having, you know, the guys with, you know, plenty of upside. I love the Vincent Velasquez pick. One of my favorite picks last year.
David, I'm reading your George Springer profile here, and I got one of the commenters here that I'd actually like you to – he's got a question for you. Mm-hmm. He said long swing – you said that George Springer has a long swing, and he wanted to know what's long about it. Are you talking elapsed time from the first move of the bat head into the swing plane till contact, or are you looking at something mechanical you don't like? You want to kind of expand on that?
Yeah, it's not anything that it's not a timing issue so much as just like, you know, when you're looking at his swing, it kind of lengthens out when he's coming over the plate a little bit. You know, he's got to extend his arms a little bit, and that's where he generates his power. But you wonder if he's going to have, like, I obviously haven't scouted him specifically in a game. I've only seen these compilations, and so it's hard to tell whether that swing's going to be able to shorten up and get a high fastball inside or something like that. So, you know, it's just something that I noticed, that I've noticed before on guys, and you can see guys that look like their bats, you know, can get through the zone pretty quickly, and his looked a little longer than I like. But it's, you know, part of the package that you really trust because you see where the power is coming from. You know, the little timing thing that I was talking about, you can see that that's not a huge issue. And, you know, put all together, I don't think I have a huge amount of doubts on how he'll do. I definitely think he'll hit for power in the future. He's not going to hit for a high average, I don't think. It just doesn't look like he's that kind of hitter. He could prove me wrong. He could go out and hit 320 in the next three levels in the minor leagues and look like, you know, he's going to be really solid. But he looks like a guy that's going to kind of, you know, enter into that Hunter Pinch range of, you know, 280, 270 on a bad year, but hit for quite a bit of power.
That's funny because John Hart gave him the Hunter Pinch comp. And just to jump on, like, about the long swing, I've noticed, like, his swing isn't really that long. It's his stride more than anything.
Yeah.
His feet are, I would say they're just a little bit more extended than his body, but it's his stride foot. So whenever he starts his swing, his lead foot goes from a little bit outside your shoulders to a really long step, almost like similar to a Carlos Lee's, kind of like his swing,
mm-hmm.
where how he's had to cut down on his stride, you know, since mm-hmm. he can't really catch up to fastballs. But right. It's kind of the same approach.
And that's the thing, is you do normally associate that long swing with power because that's where they're able to generate some power. But at the same time, the worry is, you know, obviously where you can't catch up that high fastball. But that's a bigger concern for guys who don't have above average bat speed. And so to me, that's not really a big issue because Springer does have, you know, above average bat speed. So even with that long swing, he can still generate the bat speed and able to get in the zone and hit a high fastball.
His swing is scary similar to Mike Stanton's. It's almost kind of the same movement. I hate using those comparisons, but it's pretty close, almost to like the way he starts slow and then goes strong.
And that's kind of okay because, I mean, you do want an accelerating bat through the zone, because if it's slowing down, it's not gonna have the full force when it hits the ball. If it's speeding up because it's starting slow and then accelerating, that's what you want. you really want that bat head to be accelerating through the zone.
Right, but it's one of those things that he's probably going to have to work on with pitch selection, because you leave with those type of hacks, you leave yourself open to just getting drilled on inside stuff or outside stuff. You know, and that's where, you know, the high strikeout rate probably comes from.
Yeah, definitely.
You guys want to hear what Richard Justice said about the Astros pick?
Sure.
All right, this is Drew Stubbs. Homers, just as the Astros pick. I'll take Jim Crane cleans house for $1,000, Alex.
Wow.
Can't get off Drew Stubbs even after they take another outfielder.
I think a lot of that's probably him trying to create havoc.
I admire his tenacity at pushing Drew Stubbs over the years. I mean, he's really had to work at that. That's so far in the past right now that he's, you know, has to keep bringing it up every couple of days just so that people don't forget about it.
I'm surprised he still has a paycheck.
Does anyone want to send a tweet to Keith Law? Any burning questions?
Nah, I'm sure that guy's going to be tweeting away closer to midnight. I think Kevin Goldstein. Those guys tweet more than like teenage girls. I mean, it's probably like 50 tweets in 5 minutes.
Well, what I like about Keith Law is that he's very snarky in some of his replies to some of the people that write him.
Yeah, he's always had kind of an edge ever since he came to ESPN. He certainly doesn't like his. Or it's not that he doesn't like his detractors, but he's going to let you know if he thinks you're dumb, basically.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Allison Footer had a tweet, too. It's Astros felt Springer has best power speed combo in entire draft, especially of college kids. All around tremendous athlete with great makeup. Any disagreement with that?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
So he was the best outfielder on the draft? Best college outfielder?
Yes, I will say that.
You guys didn't want to say he's better than Bubba Starling?
I still have a lot of questions about Starling's ability to hit, but at the same time, you know, Springer has those similar question marks. It's not to the extreme as Starling. It's up in the air.
Well, Starling's probably got the most open question marks. You don't really know how his stuff's going to transition. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that guy's a freakish athlete. But look at Donovan Tate, who the Padres selected, I think it was last year. His stuff really hasn't transitioned all that well. And Bubba Starling could be the same way.
All right, so who do you guys think the Astros take with their next selection? Or maybe not specific people. If you have someone specific, you can go ahead and throw it out there. But what position do you think they'll mainly be looking at?
I think we'll end up with a high school pitcher.
I could see that, too. I think it's definitely going to be a pitcher. And whether it's a high school guy or a college guy, I think is going to be left by who's on the board. But I definitely think it's going to be a pitching in the second round.
Well, you know, Chris Reed's gone.
I am broken up about that, too.
And who would have thought 16th overall? Gosh.
At least it's not 11th.
You think Brian Brookhouse will still be around?
I think he'll probably be in the third round.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he might be a bit of a reach in the second round, but yeah.
Well, in John Sickles' community draft, they had Brian Brookhouse in the second round.
Was that to Houston?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they had they selected Taylor Youngman with the Astros selection.
See, I think a lot of that, sometime from the national media, is a lot of it's convenience. A lot of people just assume just because they're in the same state, you know what? That team's lazy. They're just going to go in-state. It's not like we're in college football where Texas is just automatically going to recruit within state. I think a lot of times the national media just does that just because it's convenient.
Yeah, I think I agree. I certainly think that gets overplayed quite a bit. In fact, what was the last draftee that the Astros drafted out of Texas? Was it Chris Wallace?
Signed or drafted? Because I know we've had a few guys that we've drafted, but they
drafted.
Still play in Texas. And it's probably going to be Chris Wallace.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly think that gets overplayed quite a bit. It's the easy pick, too.
Yeah, they tend to go West Coast and East Coast more than within their own state.
Locally.
Yeah. So if I was going to guess, let's say that Henry Owens from Huntington Beach is still on the board, I would think they would go after somebody like that compared to, you know, if Workman was still on the board, which he should be at that spot.
Well, and, you know, there's a chance that they go another hitter, like a high school guy like Matt Dean, even from the Houston area, who's, I was noticing on the MLB Network broadcast, Baseball America has him as the fourth best corner infielder in this draft. Now, that's kind of like, you know, his batting average on Tuesdays and night games played on artificial turf and, you know, breaking something down to get a high ranking like that. But he is local. He's got some potential. He's another power bat. He's on the corners, which the Astros haven't really shown that they like to draft guys out there high up in the draft. But, you know, he does make some sense. He's kind of a signability concern, but if they're going to spend the money on George Springer, I think they could probably spend the money on this kid too. And, you know, get another third baseman in the system that could, you know, be up in a few years and provide another, you know, hometown hero for Jim Crane to really market.
Well, here's an interesting connection that for a guy that might be a possibility. Looking at guys that are high school pitchers, a guy named Dylan Maples. He's from North Carolina, so you already have that connection of they trust the North Carolina scout, whoever that may be, and so that might be a possibility. Projectable right-hander, low 90s fastball with a curveball.
Well, I think reading into Bobby Heck's comments the last few days, he said that this is a pitching deep draft, so it seemed like he was leaning more towards picking up a pitcher in the second round, which I could certainly see. And I think that's probably what the Astros will take in the next round is some pitching.
I think it just depends on like who's still on the board at that point. They could, just because this is a pitching deep draft, let's just say for argument's sake that your boy Jackie Bradley is still there.
But they've already drafted an outfielder. I don't know if they want to take another one.
I think where our farm system is, just add depth. We're not at the point where we just say, you know what, we have so-and-so in our farm system. We'll pass. At this point, they just need to add depth and continue to add depth regardless.
If they take Jackie Bradley Jr. in the second round, I will run around the TCB headquarters naked.
Hold up. We have a headquarters?
Yeah. Screaming his name to the high heavens.
Can I warn my wife first so that we make sure she doesn't go outside? I was actually telling her, Brooks, about how you sold your wife out on the podcast last week and told her, see, at least I don't do that to you on a podcast, so...
So we like the George Springer pick.
Yes.
I think so.
You think so?
Well, it's...
Sure, sir.
He's no Francisco Lindor, so, you know, there's got to be a little bit of disappointment.
Oh, please.
I think everyone was just happy that it wasn't Chris Reed.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That was just crazy. And, you know... I think this is this year was probably just about as surprising as 2008 when they took Jason Castro without all the disappointment of not taking Justin Smoke. I think Giovanni Mir was a little bit of a surprise, but he kind of went around the same area that he was supposed to go anyways. I think he was supposed to go to the Twins behind the Astros. And then last year, we kind of knew DDJ was going before the draft even started. So I think it's kind of nice because a lot of people had had the Astros pegged for Archie Bradley, Chris Reed, Jed Bradley, and, you know, George Springer is a nice surprise. And I don't think we can really have a whole lot of complaints about the pick.
It's also a little surprising that he fell out of the top 10. And, you know, it's always nice to get a guy that falls a little bit because you can say, hey, he was projected to go in the top 10 and we got him at 11. That's great. You know, that's the kind of thing that kind of energizes fans and you can sell them on a pick. not, you know, oh, well, we really like this guy. Even though he was not supposed to go in the first round, we thought we should draft him. And we're going to turn him into a second baseman, and you'll love him. Trust us.
I think we lost Josh.
Back in.
Welcome back. You haven't spoken, for, like, you haven't spoken for like the last 40 minutes. We're wondering if you fell asleep or something.
Oh, I was with you. Just, you know, it's quite in-depth stuff.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Let Josh go to sleep. Y'all are cruel.
I'm up in 3 hours.
I mean, he's a trooper for staying up this late.
Yes, he is.
Yes, mad props. All right, well, any listener comments or questions, email the show at thecrawfishboxes@gmail.com. Thank you, and see you next time on the TCB podcast.